For now, let's go to bookmarks. And today's guest is singer-songwriter Barnaby Ware, frontman of the Black Seeds and the musical collective Fly My Pretties, who have just released another album called Studio Recordings Part 2. It came out earlier this month, and Barnaby Ware joins me now. Hi there, Barnaby.
Hello, Jesse. Can you hear me?
I can. You sound great. And just to complete the picture for people, I wasn't going to go there this early, but we are on RNZ National. So, yes, you are correct, the son of Dick Ware.
That is correct.
When did you realise that your dad was a big deal?
I guess one of two things. When I got a part in a radio play when I was about 6 years old, yeah. Went to the studio and had a little line, and I can't remember what the radio play was, but it was at the old broadcasting house, and I had a line like, "When's dinner, Mum?" or something like that in the background. Yeah. And I got paid $500 for that, something like that. So back in the day, that was a lot, and when you were a young kid, that was a lot. That was one example. The other example was that I didn't realise that, you know, he was really doing something kind of cool in radio, you know, but his work was so cool. Lots of microphones around and tape machines, making a letterbox lizard on the tape machine, slowing his voice, or speaking slowly and recording that slowly and then speeding that up to create the character Letterbox Lizard. So, yeah, lots of great memories from realising that my dad was a broadcaster.
And now you're a big deal. Congratulations on the success of Fly My Pretties. Where does this latest album fit in? What's on it?
Oh, big deal. Thank you. Thank you, Jesse. Look, this is a chance for Fly My Pretties to go back into the studio for the first time. And I guess it was a realization that we had six live albums out there, which are all good, you know, really happy with them. And the quality of the recordings kind of got better and better as we kind of journeyed on. However, it's really something special to be able to record those songs in the studio for the first time. And as better musicians and better listeners and better producers, better players. And that was the whole reasoning behind the studio recordings.
How does it sound?
I reckon it sounds great. I'm really happy with part one and two. And it's, you know, it's not necessarily about recording them exactly the same as how you might have heard them live. But we are serving the song and trying to give you a sense of that, but also at the same time, we're not reinventing the song and doing a really cheesy version of a song that you might love it too. So it's really about serving the song. I reckon it sounds great.
How do you describe Fly My Pretties to people who haven't come across it before?
Yeah, Fly My Pretties came about as a collaborational project in the about 2004. We did some shows at Batch Theatre. We did about a week of shows, and the main theatre back then would fit about 85 people or 90 people, and it was about, I guess, combining people from different bands like Sam Scott from the Phoenix Foundation, Age Prior, and a Black Seed, Mike Fab on bass, who was a Black Seed at the time, together to do our other songs that maybe we wouldn't have done in our bands, so the Black Seeds or Phoenix Foundation. So yeah, it was a bit of an experimental adventure, I guess, musically, and it had this being in a theatre, we gave it a theatrical kind of backdrop, and we had a sense of something artistic visually as well, which developed into this amazing resource that we have now of all this original artwork and visuals, and lots of cool things that we've done that are art specifically made for the show and the theme of the show. So it's really grown over the years, but I'd just say simply a collaborational project of musicians that were unlikely to be in the same band recording a live album.
You are here to talk about a few of the things that have influenced or impressed you, and we'll start with a track. Tell us about Slim Harpo.
Yeah, Slim Harpo is a boogie woogie, early blues or R&B artist. My brother, big brother, is a bit of a theme through things that have influenced me, because my big brother and a lot of people's elder siblings are often those people that hand down great ideas, bad ideas, good books and good records to blow you away with. And I saw my brother recently in a trip to Prague, and he introduced me to this guy, Slim Harpo, who I had no idea about. And I think the song that you're going to play is Shake Your Hips, which was covered famously by the Rolling Stones, but this is the original version of it. And he just makes me smile. It's an old style recording, probably one or two microphones in a room, just makes me smile.
Okay, here it comes. RNZ National. It's the choice of Barnaby Weir. Hard not to tap your foot along with that one, Barnaby.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Just that drummer's cool little groove on the sticks there on the rim. I'm not quite sure what, but and you can hear, you know, mistakes and all in there. There's the saxophonist that just hits a real squealer right in the middle there, and it's just like, hey, that's the tape. Can't go back now.
That reminds me. This is probably not the forum, but I was watching TV, a music TV yesterday, and there was a music video version of For Today by the Netherworld Dancing Toys. Do you know that song?
Oh, yeah, it's a goodie. It's a classic. Yeah. It's a Wellington 1987 Marmalade Studios classic.
In the video, the guy seems to be singing off-key, and it made me wonder, is it possible that there's a different version on the music video than there is on the recorded one that we've heard a million times on the radio?
Yeah, totally. I'll have to check that one out. But it is possible they might have had the backing track and do a live him singing in front of the microphone, you know, to fake that and then record that. I don't know. But
mind you, Annie Crummer would make anyone look bad, right?
Wow, Annie Crummer, what a legend.
Hey, forgive me if this is too personal, but someone has suggested that you had a baby in lockdown. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did, little Miles, lockdown baby on day two of lockdown. He was a week early, and we had some issues with him actually, and in terms of his health, his breathing, which was terrible, but he's fine now. But and in lockdown, of course, it makes things even more difficult, you know, to visit and be at the hospital and things like that. So little Miles is doing fine. He's 8 weeks old now, and it was just a bit of a stressful time anyway, having a child and our first child, but he's doing okay.
Yeah, congratulations. And
thank you.
It is the most, in my experience, the most stressful and life-changing time anyway. I can't imagine what that was like to go through during lockdown, but maybe it took your focus off lockdown. I mean, it is a bit of a lockdown anyway, having a baby, isn't it?
Yeah, lots of people say, hey, that would have been great timing. And, you know, two things. I hear that most births don't go smoothly as well, so I have a lot of respect for women and mothers, because it's just a physical and mental exhausting experience for them, as well as for you as a father standing by and trying to support. Yes, it was great to have a bit of a sense of lockdown, but then, of course, you can't visit in hospitals, and then your grandparents can't visit, or your parents can't visit their grandchild, things like that. But hey, we're lucky to be alive and stoked to be in New Zealand around this lockdown time.
Yeah. I've got so many questions. Have you found a useful way to help as a dad at 8 weeks old?
I am doing my best. What I'm doing the early shift, so anywhere from 4 a.m. to about 10 a.m. And that means we're trying to just exclusively breastfeed. Gemma is, which is great. Often your ideals about the process of giving birth and home birth and holistic ideals just get blown out of the water, you know. Yeah. So you just have to be adaptable. And so we're adapting. But, yeah, I'm doing the early shift, which helps Gemma get some sleep and gets me up real early and just connecting with this little guy. And now at 8 weeks he's starting to, you know, smile and hold on to things. It's just more and more awesome every day. But I guess the first 5 to 8 weeks is the killer period, where you don't know if you're doing the right thing and you're trying your best and you're tired, but it's going pretty well, thanks.
Most people I know have a breakthrough at 12 weeks, Barnaby, so I hope that's the case for you as well.
Yeah,
keen. Hey, tell me about the books that you wanted to talk about today, the books that have had a bit of an impact on you. A Sharp Left Turn by Mike Chun. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, so the book list that I've given you is more about more current books that I've been reading or given recently. So A Sharp Left Turn. Look, Mike Chun is an amazing guy. He's worked in the music industry in lots of different levels over his lifetime. He's recently put out a book called Sharp Left Turn, which is his memoirs. I found it inspiring and funny. It's quite poetic at times, generous in his description of his experiences, but basically, starts with his early life in Otatahu, Christchurch, and early school days, and then meeting Tim Finn and other band members, starting bands, and then creating and being a bass player in Split Enz and touring and that kind of life. But then he found that he had agoraphobia, which is the fear, of other people and fear of yourself, I guess, and performing in front of people was his experience from it. And so after a number of years in the band, which he loved the music, he loved getting on stage, but this became increasingly hard for him to deal with. And he had to leave the band because of that. And basically any time he left Auckland, he felt this might come on. So crippling disease, or mental health issue. But I just I have a lot of respect for Mike Chun, because he goes on to detail the trials and tribulations of the band and the overseas touring, and then his mental health issues, as well as some really big and inspirational New Zealand music changes in the landscape from the late 90s with his roles for APRA and other roles. He helped change the radio quota, increasing it dramatically. He helped create New Zealand Music Week, which then became New Zealand Music Month. He was part of that team, and he's just someone that's looking out for the songwriters out there. And then he started with help from lots of people, but Play It Strange Trust, which encourages young people to experience or get into music writing and expressing themselves, and which is really important, as we all know, from between 8 and 18. His generation was a generation told not to talk out of turn, but with music, you can say what's on your mind. Great book, and I recommend it. Yeah,
yeah, it must have been particularly hard for him to go through that mental health stuff in a decade where we possibly didn't even have the language really for chatting about that. It would not have been, say what you like about how difficult it is to talk about now. We've at least made some strides. It's kind of a normal thing to say that you have anxiety or depression or mental health issues, but it would have been pretty foreign to everyone back then, I imagine.
Yeah, totally. And and you know, to speak about it and to think about ways of dealing with it. And his way of dealing with it, one of his ways of dealing with it, as far as I could understand, was creating new opportunities for New Zealand musicians and making the outlook in business as well for them a lot rosier, as well as creating Play It Strange. You know, it's just a cool tool to be a part of music without having to play necessarily in front of lots of people all the time, but to still be a part of music.
Now tell me about 21 Lessons for the 21st Century.
Yeah, well, this book is quite a popular book. It probably needs some updating now that we've had COVID and Brexit has gone through and Trump's shenanigans. But look, it's quite a dense book by Yuval Noah Harari. I'm finding it, still reading it, informative and interesting, quite dry, thought-provoking. And I guess his things that he's, if I understand it correctly, is how technology is disrupting society currently, you know, financially, and disrupting our economic systems and our political systems, how automation and computers are taking over the jobs of the future, and what that future would look like in 50 years, and how that affects humans. And he also looks at immigration, global immigration, and cultural integration, and the challenges of that socially and politically. And so, yeah, it's just and among other subjects like terrorist groups and how they affect us, and how humans are. It said one of his quotes, how humans are far more arrogant and ignorant than we realize. So it's just an interesting, really interesting professor of history, and it just gets me thinking critically about current times, and it's been quite enjoyable.
I think I've read this Jimi Hendrix biography, Excuse Me While I Kiss the Sky, The Life of Jimi Hendrix. Are you a fan?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jimi Hendrix. I think a lot of musicians are. And look, I just, this book, Excuse Me While I Kiss the Sky, I'm reading for the second time. And David Henderson, it's also dense, very detailed history of his life, or biography of his life. And he's just an amazing artist. And I think that aside from all the burning guitars and incredible reinvention of the guitar and electric guitar and tone, Jimi Hendrix is also a really artistic, dreamy, thoughtful, loving, and kind of modern human that, you know, is quite intelligent. And I don't think that a lot of people, you know, talk about that as personality, a gentle personality, as much as they do his amazing, you know, mind-bending psychedelic riffs, you know. So I find it really interesting. Also, he's got lots of he's notated lots of quotes from people like Eric Clapton and Chaz Chandler and his manager, and who was in the Kinks, and word for word. So there's like from the horse's mouth quotes, you know, from recordings and different films and different details. So yeah, it's quite a detailed look at his life and really
interesting. And his backup guys, right? Was it Mitch Mitchell and
Mitchell.
The bass player and the
yes,
the
Mitch,
drummer.
And why can't I remember either? You put me on the spot.
It wasn't Chaz Chandler. Yeah, we'll get it. Don't worry. Hey, we're going to play one of your tracks now, Fly My Pretties. Which one have you chosen for us?
Yeah, so this is from Ryan Preble, who's a great friend of mine and also brother of Lee Preble, who recorded this album. And it is called, where is he? Hit the Hay. It's on the latest Fly My Pretties Part 2. And look, Ryan Preble's been a great friend to Fly My Pretties, and he's been on almost every album. And I think this song is a good representation of his bluesy funk. He explores with the band The Nudge, who are one of my favourite New Zealand groups. And I just wanted you to hear this. And instead of propping one of my songs, I thought, hey, let's check out this awesome song. And it kind of fits in on our slightly bluesy vibe that we got going.
Okay, here it comes. We'll be right back. RNZ National, Fly My Pretties and Hit the Hay featuring Ryan Preble. I've got frontman Barnaby Weir with me talking about a few of the things that have influenced him, or that he's enjoyed, and bookmarks, our regular Wednesday slot. Tell me about Formula One, Drive to Survive. It's a movie that you're recommending to us.
I know, I cautiously gave you a list of things that I've been watching. I mean, look, COVID has provided quite a lot of watching time in between nappy changing. And I never thought that I'd be interested in Formula One. But after watching Drive to Survive, which is a Netflix production, I was surprisingly riveted. And it's quite exciting, not so much the sport and the ethics behind that, of course, but just the competition and the edge of technology and the edge of competitiveness. Oh man, it's an outrageous thing to watch. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't, and I've yet to watch the Michael Jordan story as well. Were you a basketball fan, or was it a similar sort of thing? You weren't much interested in basketball, but enjoyed this nonetheless.
I think I was interested in basketball for a little bit there, but being quite short and not very coordinated with the people, it wasn't you know, I couldn't really express myself on the court. But I was back in the 90s interested in basketball, and that is particularly engrossing story as well, The Last Dance, Michael Jordan story. And of course you know it's a really well made doco because you're speaking with all the right people and you've got all the you know, locker room footage and on court footage and all the big bosses talking and all the players talking. So that's been cool. Been enjoying that.
You also have a podcast to recommend. It's called Disgraceland. Can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, Disgraceland, and by Jake Brennan and co. He's the voice behind it, which is slightly annoying in that overly American hype kind of way. However, don't worry, because the content's really good. It's really well written. What it is about, Disgraceland, is about American artists such as Kurt Cobain, James Brown, Johnny Cash. Really well written, 40-minute stories that are wonderfully produced about their dark times and when they misbehaved and things they did wrong, and which you might not know, you know, these stories, because often we talk about our idols, about all the great things they did, and you know, it's really well researched as well. And so what it will do, we'll start off right at the time when James Brown is fleeing from the police and he's getting chased down the motorway. He's got a shotgun in his car, he's got no money, he's spent his fortunes in the 80s, he's just been smoking PCP, and he's having a nightmare, and it just it takes you through that day, you know, or what's going on, and why, and how he got there. So each one is, particularly good. It's kind of like The Dirt on people. There's another great one on Johnny Cash, how he accidentally burnt down some nature reserve when he was on a bender. And there's some insights into Kurt Cobain as well, things that you might not know about his life and what was troubling him. And it's, superbly written. I recommend that.
And on YouTube, there's a series that you enjoy called Kurgisagt, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I guess this is for, this is like, if you want just some hard-hitting 10-minute or 15-minute animated documentary or about different things in science and philosophy and space and reality, consciousness, lots of different subjects. It tells you the guts of what we know. I mean, you can look up vaccinations and what we know, some of the facts and, you know, some of the myths. And it's kind of like explained, you know, it does a fairly, I wouldn't say it's lazy. I would say it's a modern YouTube version of, you know, finding out about something you might not, you're interested in, but you don't know the details of, and it goes, cuts straight to the point, I guess. Hey, Jesse, is it okay to do a little shout out?
Please do.
Can I do a happy birthday shout out to my friend Phil Reed, who's a big fan of your show? He's probably listening right now, and it's his birthday today. So happy birthday, Phil.
I know that name, Phil Reed. Who's Phil Reed when he's at home?
He's a master of lots of different things, but he works for the Wellington City Council and other things. He's done lots of radio. He's a big radio fan and has produced and done a lot of radio too.
Yeah, okay. Hey, nice one. Happy birthday, Phil. We are going to get a bit of an update. I used to be Celia Wade Brown's press secretary, my producer is telling me. We're going to do an update on the missing trampers shortly, Barnaby. Yes. I want to say thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Good to chat to you. And good luck with the album as well. It's called Fly My Pretty's Studio Recordings, Part 2, released earlier this month, and people can find it presumably in the usual places.
Yeah, totally. No, thanks for having me, Jesse.
Nice to chat. That's Barnaby Weir, frontman of the Black Seeds and of the musical collective Fly My Pretties.